Welcome to the American Ag Network Week in Review for April 28th. I'm Sabrina Hill. Rusty Halverson and I spent the week in Washington, D.C. for the National Association of Farm Broadcasting's annual Washington Watch. It gave us the opportunity to meet with several national leaders and get the latest information on important topics firsthand. Coming up later, I talk with a representative of the United Soybean Board, and Rusty joins us in a minute with some of his hot top stories of the week on EPA waivers and the embattled Scott Pruitt. But first, South Dakota Senator John Thune, along with Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown, announced Wednesday bipartisan legislation they want included in the 2018 Farm Bill. The Agriculture Risk Coverage Improvement and Innovation Act would modify the payment calculation and other parts of the program to improve its safety net potential. Rusty Halverson and I were on Capitol Hill as Thune spoke with us and other farm broadcasters about the ARC program.
Today we are dropping my 10th bill. provision. These are all bills that are designed to be incorporated into the final farm bill. This one has to deal with the commodity title, the ARC program in particular, which was the program of choice for most of the growers in our part of the country that raise wheat and corn and beans. And it's not effective today because of the price circumstances that we're in. So we've got to look at how we can modify that farm or that particular program and make it work in today's agriculture. And so we've made some changes in it or proposed some changes in it, which we hope we can get adopted in the Senate version of the bill. They didn't have any of these in the House bill. The House bill relies exclusively in the commodity title of the bill on the PLC program, which uses a reference price, provides price protection. But the thing about the ARC program that many of our growers like is it provides not just price protection but revenue protection. And so if you have production losses in tough years, then it also allows for provides some safety net protection against that. There are a couple of different things, changes that we make, and one is it's a five-year rolling average, so we go to a 10. And we also make some adjustments. It's based on average county loss, and so we adjust that from 14% above county average loss down to 10%. There are a couple of other things that we do too to tweak it, but mainly it has to do with what data you're pulling from past, and obviously the five-year average is not working today. So that's one of the principal changes that we make. And there are I think at least right now a number of farm organizations that are coming out supporting that, National Corn Growers of course. And we are working with some of the others as well. And I think some of the state organizations, too, that in states where the ARC program has been the preferred alternative, that's the take-up rate on that in South Dakota was 90%. So, and we think we need to have an alternative to the PLC program, which works well in other places of the country, but generally a revenue-based program works pretty well for us.
And now Rusty Halverson joins us with the week's top news.
EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt testified to members of the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee on Thursday. He told lawmakers that he wants to work with Congress to reform the renewable fuel standard. Pruitt told the committee that it was important to create transparency in the market for renewable identification numbers, or RINs, to reduce fraud and to understand what drives prices.
Many have talked about transparency as an example with respect to the trading platform and the RFS trading platform, how long you can hold a RIN as an example, who can buy, who can sell RINs. There are those kinds of, I think, evaluations that we can engage from a regulatory perspective. And as you know, there's also consideration about the RVP waiver and the E15 being allowed year-round. I think that is something, it is a legal determination, it's not a policy determination, and we've been earnest the last several months evaluating that in hopes that we can get to a conclusion on our ability to take those kinds of actions. But I really believe that Congress's role in this is terribly important. Because as you look at the issues that we're facing with respect to the renewable fuels standard and the viability of the RINs platform, we need both Congress and our regulatory responses to be working together.
Addressing a question from Representative Gene Green, a Democrat from Texas, Pruitt revealed on Thursday that the EPA has received more RFS waiver requests already this year than it did in 2017 and 2016.
It runs about a year behind, Congressman. The applications we got in 17 relate to the 2016 obligations, and as I recall, there were somewhere in the mid-20s that we received. We received more than that this year for the 2017. But what's really driving this in a lot of respects, I mentioned this earlier, is just the RIN prices, you know, dropping to 40 cents, up to 85 cents, and the rest. And so you just see a lot of pressure on those small refineries, particularly because these escalating RIN prices and the instability in the market.
The EPA has drawn criticism for a seeming lack of transparency on the waivers dating back to 2016. Biofuel proponents note the requests are coming even as refiners are reporting hefty to record profits. According to a review of EPA data performed by the Renewable Fuels Association, the waivers granted to small refineries in 2016 and 2017 may have prevented about 1.6 billion gallons of biofuels from entering the nation's fuel supply. The agency granted nearly 40 RFS waivers to so-called small refiners since 2016, including about 25 in 2017 alone. Oil refineries that produce 75,000 barrels per day or less are eligible for the waivers. Small refinery companies have cited high RIN costs as a reason for the requested waivers. The New York Times reported that oil giants Chevron and Exxon have requested waivers for 2018. Several Democrats on the House committee spent much of their time during Thursday's hearing pressing Pruitt on travel and other expenditures that have raised ethics questions about his office. Representative Frank Pallone of New Jersey telling Pruitt and members of the committee the administration has brought secrecy and scandal to EPA.
In any other administration, Republican or Democrat, you would be long gone by now. So far, 140 House Democrats have signed on to a resolution introduced by Ms. Castor expressing no confidence in you, Mr. Pruitt. Additionally, four Republican House members have also called on you to step down. And the voices are growing. Just look at the critiques from former Bush EPA Administrator and New Jersey Governor Christine Todd Whitman, who called Administrator Pruitt's tenure, and I quote, a slap in the face to fiscal responsibility and responsible governance. And said also that evidence is abundant of the dangerous political turn of an agency that is supposed to be guided by science. Another former Republican EPA Administrator, William Riley, called Administrator Pruitt, and I quote, a third-rate ideologue. Past administrators of both parties believed in the EPA's mission and understood that they had been given a sacred trust by the people of our country. Unfortunately, this is not the case with you, Mr. Pruitt. Clearly, you do not believe in EPA's mission and appear to have forgotten that you are here to serve all the American people, not merely a select few or just yourself. And the fact is, Administrator Pruitt has used this office as nothing more than an opportunity to either enrich himself or his corporate friends, and President Trump seems to be perfectly fine with all these actions, so much for draining the swamp.
Some Republican members of the committee came to Pruitt's defense. North Dakota Representative Kevin Kramer.
I have to say, I think, though, of all of the accusations today, it was interesting, after about 4 minutes of defending the swamp, one of their leaders said, so much for draining the swamp. Mr. Administrator, I think the greatest sin that you've committed, if any, is that you've actually done what President Trump ran on, what he won on, and what he's commissioned you to do in finding some balance in both carrying out the mission of environmental protection while at the same time looking out for our economy and jobs creation. And I just, again, for the people of North Dakota, appreciate that so much.
Pruitt also testified before the House Interior, Environment, and Related Agencies Appropriations Subcommittee on Thursday afternoon. I'm Rusty Halverson.
During Washington Watch, I talked with a representative of the United Soybean Board. Here's the interview.
I'm Megan Kaiser. I'm a director on the United Soybean Board for the state of Missouri, and we farm in Carrollton, Missouri, about an hour east of Kansas City.
And what do you grow?
We grow soybeans and corn.
I want to talk to you today about gene editing and plant breeding, and I want to ask you first off why this is an important topic to you.
Well, the first thing is that we see genes in our seed as really helping us be more sustainable. We are able to manage our inputs better, making sure the right seeds in the right soil, the right inputs are used to make sure that we're growing as much as possible, higher quality with as little inputs as possible, so that we can be more environmentally friendly and better for the bottom line as producers.
So what traits would you be looking for?
Well, I think one of the traits that have made a big difference for us in the past is drought tolerance. But I would also say, as a farmer, I don't know what I don't know. And so we're looking for innovation in this realm. what I'm not the person that's going to be doing the actual research, but what we're looking for is how can we get better? How can we be better? What are some of the things that are holding us back? And I think it's a really exciting topic to throw out there for researchers, that to be innovative, what are things that could really move the bottom line? One of the things that we look at is quality of our soybean and our protein content, our amino acid profile. I don't know, is there something that we can do in that gene editing arena that would improve our quality of our soybean? And I think we're very interested to find out.
Some other hot topics happening right now, can you discuss trade and how that is affecting you?
Well, trade is always very important to agricultural producers. That's what drives the price. And so as Checkoff, we focus a lot on not only what is the research that's important to us here at home, but how can we help differentiate U.S. soy on a global scale. And so we have the United Soy Export Council that we partner with the American Soybean Association with, and they do a great job for us of developing new areas. Aquaculture is a booming area in increasing our exports. Obviously, we have pork and chicken that we continue to want to feed as many as possible. We're constantly looking for new ways to build demand internationally.
Any other topics that you wanted to discuss with our listeners?
Well, I think one of the things that really leads to our competitiveness on trade is our infrastructure and making sure that the soy and corn that I grow on my farm can get to the global marketplace as quickly and environmentally efficiently as possible. And so As the United Soybean Board, we're really placing a bigger focus on infrastructure and trying to figure out what's the information that we can provide that would really move the needle in developing and maintaining our inland waterway infrastructure.
So you just brought up the waterways. We hear a lot about infrastructure and a lot of things that need to be done. What would you say are top concerns? If you were to name off two or three of the very top concerns in infrastructure, what would they be to you and your farm personally?
Well, there's two things that we're really looking at. One is what does dredging do in the lower Mississippi for all U.S. soy producers? And actually, the Soy Transportation Coalition just released a study that really shows the impact of maintaining our waterways to make sure that the ships can come in a little bit further and what that means to the bushel price on our farm. The other aspect is making sure that our locks and dams stay open for business. And so what the Checkoff focuses on is making sure that the information needed to make sure that those things happen or at least that the information that is necessary to make those decisions is sound and based on science. And so then we leave it up to the decision makers from there.
Any other comments today?
I think that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Megan. Megan Kaiser with the United Soybean Board. That is this week's review. I'm Sabrina Hill. For Rusty Halverson and myself, thanks for listening. Join us again next week.